Okay. Today's election day, and again, it's been a very, very contentious contentious election period, and I would say what's been what's defined the United States over the past 9 months, 10 months, 11 months is a lack of civility. A lack of civil discourse, a sense of what I will call sinas chinam, where that you could see very clearly if you're looking, if you're paying attention, that the fabric of decency in society is starting to become fractured. There's a lot more yelling than there is listening. There is lack of respect for alternative viewpoints and positions. The dialogue amongst the presidential candidates is reduced to personal insults and attacks. A cancel culture where no one is allowed to voice their legitimate opinions. Race issues are dominating what's going on, and there are reasonable positions on both sides of the argument, yet there is no civil discourse whatsoever. Economic issues pervade, not just because of COVID, but class structures. And in general, arguments about, legitimate arguments, but no civil discourse about the Supreme Court and its makeup, about things like abortion and the right to life or not. And legitimate arguments that a secular society might have on those matters. And in general, at least for me, an erosion of a lot of the confidence that the United States of America used to bring. And very often in a society, when you have a common enemy and a common thing that is attacking you, oftentimes that will bring people together. And it's clear that the enemy that is COVID-19 also has failed in bringing together any kind of, okay, we've got a common challenge. Let us come together to meet that common challenge. On the contrary, it is another source of division, another source of machlokes, and to blame this candidate or that candidate, you know, if you just look at what's going on in the world and what's going on in Europe, and nothing is really working terribly effectively, and the idea that just again, argument for the sake of argument, and a sense of the civility of civil discourse of healthy modern society seems to be eroding before our very eyes, and that to me is a scary thing. It's scary for the United States. It's scary for United States Jewry. It's scary for Israelis, and it's not a healthy. Not a healthy thing that we're witnessing. It's the first time in my lifetime that I've seen this level of just base lack of derech eretz, lack of any kind of real sinas chinam that pervades. And what destroyed the second base HaMikdash, lahavdil, but it wasn't the Romans who destroyed the second base HaMikdash, is when there's sinas chinam amongst people, and people are attacking each other, when they should be working together, building, but they're attacking each other, so then they just defeat each other, and then it's very easy for a Roman Empire to just waltz in to Yerushalayim and take over. And that's perhaps, chas v'shalom, but perhaps things that we are witnessing in the United States today. And again, you know, the idea of the riots that will likely ensue no matter who wins tomorrow or the next day or the day after, and preparing for that, is all highlighting illnesses in society that we find ourselves in. In contrast, I just want to share with you a thought, once again, from Rabbi Sacks, to heal a fractured world, he should have a refuah shlema. But he highlights a story, a beautiful story, and I want to share with you that story of what like it really should be like. And then we'll try and tie it into the Parsha and to Yeshiva and perhaps draw some ideas that are relevant. Describes In 1966, an 11-year-old black boy moved with his parents and family to a white neighborhood in a suburb of Washington, D.C. And this black boy was sitting with his two brothers and two sisters on the front steps of his house, and he waited to see how they would be greeted as they moved into this predominantly white neighborhood. And passersby turned to look at them, but no one gave them a smile or even a glance of recognition. And all the fearful stories he had heard about how whites treated blacks seemed to be coming true. Years later, writing about those first days in their new home, he says, "I knew we were not welcome here. I knew we would not be liked here. I knew we would have no friends here. I knew we should not have moved here." And as he was thinking those thoughts on that 1966 day, a woman coming home from work passed on the other side of the street. She turned to the children with a broad smile, said, "Welcome." She disappeared into her house and emerged moments later with a tray laden with drinks and cream cheese and jelly sandwiches, which she brought over for the children, making them feel at home. That moment, the young 11-year-old boy said, changed his life. It gave him a sense of belonging that when there was none before. It made him realize that at a time when race relations in the United States were still fraught, where a black family could not feel at home in a white area, there could be relationships that were colorblind. And over the years, he learned to admire much about that woman across the street. But it was the first spontaneous act of greeting that became for him a definitive memory. It broke down a wall, separating strangers and turning them into friends. The young man, his name is Stephen Carter, and he grew up to become a professor of law at Yale University, and he wrote a book about what he learned that day, and he called that book Civility. And the name of that woman was Sarah Kestenbaum, a religious Jew. And he writes, in the Jewish tradition, he notes such civility he calls chesed, the doing of acts of kindness, which in turn derive from the understanding that human beings are made in the image of God. Civility, he says, itself may be seen as a part of chesed. And then he says, I'm quoting from the book, "Nothing in contemporary secular conversation calls us to give up anything truly valuable for anyone else. Only religion offers a sacred language of sacrifice, selflessness, awe that enables believers to treat their fellow citizens and fellow passengers as fellow passengers. But even if religion is the engine of civility, it has too few serious practitioners, which is why we are truly moved by it to love, to those people who love their fellow human beings, and that those people are so special." And then he writes, "I learned that truth in 1966, and to this day, I can close my eyes and feel on my tongue the smooth silk sweetness of the cream cheese and jelly sandwiches that I gobbled on that summer afternoon when I discovered how a single act of genuine and unassuming civility can change a life forever." We live in a world today which is unfortunately lacking basic sense of civility, and I believe a great lesson to this idea emerges from Psukim that we read in this week's Parsha, because in the beginning of Parsha's Vayera, we learn and we hear about Avram Avinu, and we hear about he's just had a bris milah, and he's in pain, and he's suffering. Vayisa Einav, and he sees in the distance, Vinei Shlosha Anashim Nitzavim Alav. Three people are walking. Vayorat Lekwasam, he runs to them. Vayishtachu Arts, and he greets them. He's in pain. As a result of Bris Milah, he runs to do chesed. Washes their feet, gives them to drink, runs from place to place to go ahead and serve them. Vayimaher Av Ma'ola, El Sarai Mahari, run, hurry. Prepare food, kemach soles lushi, va'asiu gos. And they do this tremendous chesed for these strangers. Chazal tell us that Avram was talking to Hashem when these strangers emerged. And Chazal teaches, godo haknas es orchim, mikabolas pnei hashchina. That's step one. And these three people are angels, and they have a mission for Avram. You're going to have a child. Amazing. You need to go ahead. We need to save Lot. And we're here to destroy Sodom. And there's a straight story from this episode to the story of Sodom, without any breaks, which highlight there is a connection between this chesed of Avram and the story of the destruction of Sodom. And Sodom is a society that lacks basic sense of civility. Pasuk says in last week's parasha, when Lot chose to go to Sodom, va'anshei Sodom ra'im v'chata'im la'Hashem ma'od. Ra'im chata'im la'Hashem ma'od. Not a little bit. And Lot is attracted to Sodom. Sodom has something for Lot, because it is a very, very affluent society. There's a lot of money. It's very comfortable to live there. Big cars, beautiful houses, and it can be very, very geschmack. And when Lot is given a choice, he says to Avram, thank you, I'll go to Sodom. And indeed, Avraham understands what Sodom represents. And when there is a war between four armies and five armies, and Avram comes to the scene, and Avram generates victory, and he goes to redeem Lot from these kings. The king of Sodom says, I want to give you gifts. I want to reward you for helping us out. And Avram says, last week's parasha, Perek Yudal Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Avram el Melech Sodom, Imichut ve'ad sroch na'al, I will take not even a shoelace from you. V'mekach mikol ha'shalach, v'lo tomar, so you shall not say, Anshei Sodom, Ani he'esharti es Avram, that I created Avram's wealth. I'm not even going to take a shoelace from Anshei Sodom. What is so horrible? What do they do that is so bad? So Chazal flesh things out in a very, very profound way. The Ramban, I'm not going to go through it in great detail because we have a busy night. But Chazal tell us that when it comes to Hachnasas Orchim, any guests in Sodom were absolutely shunned. Any sense of chesed in Sodom was absolutely shunned. Sodom was a place that was extremely territorial. We have money. We have the comforts of life. And people want to come moved in, want beneficence from our society. We're not interested. Those are parasites. And they shut their doors to any guests, to anyone who wanted in. And perhaps that is exactly why, when Hashem has a plan to destroy Sodom, he says, HaMechasem in Avram, can I go ahead and hide this from Avram? Avram, the paragon of civility, of chesed, of good deeds. I can't hide this from Sodom. They did not give money away. They had exclusive neighborhoods. No hachnasas orachim. In fact, they even covered their fruit trees so birds would not partake. No one could partake of any of their property. And then there's a very beautiful and famous story of Lot's daughter. The pasuk describes a female cry, Hakit Sa'akata, a female cry. And Lot had a daughter, her name was Pletas. And she was married to the mayor of Sodom, a big person in Sodom. And she saw one of the very few poor people in Sodom, homeless guy, who had nothing, and she had rachmanis for him. And every day she'd go and bring him some water, a little bit of food from her house, to this ani. And the people of Sodom didn't understand how this ani was surviving. Because you're not allowed to give and be generous to outsiders, to people who need help, to parasites. So how could he survive? And then they found out that the daughter of Lot, the mayor's wife, was supporting him. And they decide they're going to burn her alive. She was burnt alive. And her cries, that's the female cry that was heard. Pirkei Avos says, Midas Sdom, the Midah of Sdom is Sheli Sheli, V'shalcha Shalcha. What's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. No interaction, no chesed. The word sodomy, which comes from Sdom, even when it comes to a physical, sexual act, which is supposed to be, in its normal and natural form, an idea of mutual giving. But they transformed the act to one of narcissistic taking. And that's the concept of sodomy. This is who Sdom was. This is what they're all about. A society that is built on consumption, on not sharing, an Ayn Randian society to the extreme, if you're familiar with who I'm talking about. And the only time the Mabul destroyed the entire world, but it was fit, after the Mabul was fit to rebuild, to build again, saved someone, and even the land was able to rebuild. Stone was scorched earth. And Ad Hayom Hazeh, you go to the Dead Sea area where stone was, and it's still scorched earth. No one survives. No one is untouched. And when a materialistic society loses its sense of civility, it has a pernicious impact on every single member of that society. This is the Avraham Sdom contrast. And it's what chesed, civility, hachnasas orchim, caring for others, giving to others, is really what the Jewish message is all about. I want to share with you two fantastic stories that Rabbi Frant has in his books. Beautiful stories. Story number one. He describes a Jew from Israel who's marrying off a daughter, comes to America to collect, and he starts in Florida, all the shuls, all the Jewish neighborhoods, and he starts collecting. He rents a car, starts collecting, knocking on doors. And then he makes his way north, leaves Miami Beach, Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood. Then he gets to Georgia. And he's heading to Atlanta. Driving pretty fast. And he gets stopped for speeding. License and registration. He doesn't have an American license. He's got an Israeli license. He shows it to the officer. Officer says in his southern accent, y'all from Israel? He says, yeah. I can't write a summons, says the officer, because you don't have a U.S. license. I got to take it down to the courthouse. He goes to the courthouse, brings him in. Judge tells him, fine of $175. So this Jew from Israel has a fanny pack type of thing, and he starts pulling out these wads of money, thousands of dollars. And he pulls out $175, gives it to the judge. Now this route from northern Florida to Georgia up the East Coast is a big time drug route. And the judge sees this guy with a wad, a huge wad, thousands of dollars of cash, pulling out $175 to pay. And he says, he assumes that he's a drug dealer. And the guy says, I'm not a drug dealer. He says, well, how do you have that cash? Where's that money from? He explains to him, well, I'm marrying off my daughter in Israel, and I came to the United States to collect money. Who are you collecting money from? Well, I go to Jewish communities, I knock on doors, and I collect money. Do you know these people that you're collecting from? Never met them in my life. Strangers? Strangers. And they just give you money? Yeah. They just give me money. And the judge doesn't buy it. Doesn't make any sense to him. He asks the numbers of the rabbis to send in affidavits. He doesn't get it. And finally, the rabbis send in affidavits, these rabbis from the Florida and other places. Yeah, it's true. And the judge is flabbergasted. He says, I absolutely joined the wrong religion. But that's Am Yisrael. That's civility. That's chesed. That's giving. Tells over another story. Second story is of a guy driving another car story. Upstate New York. He's driving. Gets a flat tire. Pulls to the side. And has a yarmulke on his head. So upstate New York, Catskills area. Car starts stopping to help him out. Car stops. Helps him out. Changes the flat. And then guy says, thanks so much. And then he gets a look at him. He's got a yarmulke on and a big cross on his chest, chained with a cross. And he looks Hispanic. So the guy who helped him out says, I'm confused, you have a cross. Are you Jewish? He says, I'm not Jewish. So why are you wearing that skull cap on your head? Oh, the skull cap. Oh, my mother told me that anytime you're driving and you get stuck, you get caught, you get a flat, just put that on, someone's going to stop and help you out. That's Klal Yisrael. That's civility. That's a sense of chesed. Lot was caught up in stone culture. And when it's time to leave, to save his life, because Sodom is going to get destroyed, the pasuk says, Vayismamea. He vacillates. The trump on that pasuk is a shalsheles. Back and forth, back and forth. He's not ready. He doesn't have the strength necessarily to walk away. And finally, Avram has to drag him out. And I want to share with you an incredible vart. Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Yudbeis, listen to this pasuk. Avram heard that Lot was captured. Vayikhu es Lot, they took Lot. Ve'es rechusho ben achi Avram. Listen to that pasuk. Who was Lot? Avram's nephew. Vayikhu es Lot ve'es rechusho ben achi Avram. Does that make sense? That structure in the pasuk. It should say Vayikhu es Lot ben achi Avram ve'es rechusho. It's not what it says. Vayikhu es Lot ve'es rechusho ben achi Avram. Lot could have been the nephew of Avram. He could have. He should have. That's what he was really all about. But he got caught up. He got stuck. He got too attached to his rechush, to his property, to his stuff. And it caused him to lose sight of what it means to be Ben Achi Avram. Rabosai? I'm not here to go on a Western civilization or American bashing session. It's not what I want to do right now. But I do want to sensitize you that I believe society is at a crossroads. A crossroads that is a scary crossroads. But when a society becomes too selfish, too narcissistic, too focused exclusively on its narrow self-interests, without a look at the bigger picture, therein begins the decay of society. Therein begins Khurban. And it happens. It just happens. Something to daven for, that there can be a repair to the fracturedness and divisiveness. In a yeshiva, such as ours, I think also it's appropriate to reflect on, I feel like there's a certain, I guess, end of the first quarter of our year, signified by a Shana Bet last week, a Shana Aleph, trip, call it, shift, in some capsules, but a certain, okay, first quarter's over, a reset. Post-quarantine, shift into second quarter. And I think part of the message I want to share to the yeshiva, with the yeshiva, is it's time now to really be focused on second quarter stuff. Second quarter stuff is like real steiging and real support of each other, being supportive of each other, and know that when one or two guys in a room have a tough time waking up, know that it affects the other guys in the room. And when a chavrusa is a little schwach in his intensity, it affects his mate, it affects his Rebbe, it affects the entire shir. We are a community. And we are a community that has to be supportive of each other, pushing each other, and really demanding everyone's excellence. When people are down and having a hard time, we pick them up. We help them. When people need chizuk, we give chizuk. When people need a smile, a bright and energetic good morning, we bring that energy, that positive energy. That's what strong communities do. They support, they give, they are there for each other. I think the plague of Sodom, and it's a plague that we all confront in our own ways, is there is a, what I call, a mentality of scarcity. If one feels there is not enough, then one has to grab more. It's a very famous chazal that describes six people sharing a single blanket. And it's almost impossible to do. Because when you're sharing a blanket, the tendency is we pull towards ourselves. And the only way six people share a blanket successfully is if everyone's making sure the other guy has enough blanket. Sodom was plagued by scarcity mentality, so I can't give. And if outsiders come in, then they're going to take my things. So shali shali shalcha shalcha. If I feel there's not enough, I try and grab a bigger piece of the pie for myself. I think that's what's going on a little bit in today's society also. A scarcity mentality, not in a mentality of abundance, where I have plenty and I can give, but in a mentality where I don't have enough, and therefore I'm insecure and I have to grab more for myself no matter what stands in my way. I would like to close with one last thought from our parsha. It's probably my favorite Dvar Torah of all time. My favorite. So I bet you heard it from me last year, because it's my favorite. We read the Akedah in this week's parsha. The Akedah is, in my opinion, the most dramatic set of psukim that we have in all of Chumash. So dramatic that we read these psukim on the Yom HaDin, on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. And we know how the story goes. But perhaps what we don't know is when it's all over, after the Akedah, the Korban is brought, and everything is good, five more psukim. Listen to these psukim. Vayhi achrei hadvarim ha'ela. After this all transpires, Vayu God la'Avraham le'mor. Aram is told that his brother Nachor has a wife named Milcah, and they have kids. Listen to the kids. Utz, Buz, Kimuel, Keshet, Chazo, Pildash, Yidlof, and Besua. You know how many kids that is? Eight kids. Eight boys. And then we're told that Nachor, Avram's brother, had a Pilegish. Her name was Reuma. And she had four kids. Tevach, Kacham, Tachash, and Ma'acha. End of story. Okay, I'm going to ask you right now, who can name me any of the kids of Nachor? Raise your hand. I'll take one. Besua, very good. I'll take another. Utz, very good. Excellent. Anyone else? Buz, very good. Yes? What? Very good. Okay. Interesting, though. How many sons did Nachor have? 12 sons. How many sons did Nachor have from a wife? Eight. How many from a concubine? Four. Well, that's interesting. 12 sons, eight from a wife, four from concubines. That's interesting. Obviously, Yaakov too had 12 sons, eight from wives, four from the shvachos, from concubines. That is not a coincidence. What is the message? Why does the Torah want us to know that right after the Akedah, Avram had 12 nephews? Why is that so important? You'll tell me Balabat is because of Besuel and Yitzchak is going to marry Rivka. Not enough. Not good enough. Rabbos, I think there's a message over here. And it's the message of the second quarter of Mevaseret. And that message is, the Torah wants us to compare Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov to Nachor. And Nachor has 12 sons. And he's pumping them out one after another like it's nothing. One after another, 8 plus 4, boom. With 5 psukim, 12 kids. To produce Yitzchak, Sarah is Nakara, Avram's 100 years old, they daven for tens of years before they get Yitzchak. And then there's the Akedah. And they almost lose. And Yitzchak to have Yaakov. Rivka's also not Kara. Tens of years without children, and finally, she has twins. And Yaakov is born, but he has to deal with Esav. And he has to deal with Lavan. And he has to deal with losing Yosef. Trials and tribulations in order to produce Yud Beis Shvat. But one thing I can guarantee, maybe not, but I hope I can guarantee. If I asked you to name the Yud Beis Shvat, you can rattle those off. If I ask you to name the Yud Beis B'nai Nachor, you can't rattle those off. And what the Torah wants us to see and to hear loud and clear is if anything is going to endure, if it's going to last, Klal Yisrael lasts, Yud Beis Shvatim is nitzri, is eternal, does not disappear, is because anything that requires sacrifice to produce, that requires an akeda to produce, that requires shvitz, that is going to last. If it comes quick and easy, if it comes without effort, without push, without any real challenge and sacrifice like the sons of Nachor, it's relegated to the dustbins of history. It does not last. It will not last. It will be forgotten forever. So, Rabosai, what I'd like us to take away tonight before we hear from Rav Aaron Heller Shlita is, number one, is a sense of who we are. We are B'nai Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Don't get too caught up in the passing fads of the secular societies around us, because all too often they are built on foundations of straw and they don't endure. Halavai does endure. Halavai gets itself back on track. It's not good for anyone in the United States to be off track. But societies that are not built on civility, on chesed, on giving, are built on iPods and iPads, iGen, as your generation is referred to, is not a strong foundation. So build chesed and civility in your lives and understand that anything that's going to last and endure is going to require strong effort, sacrifice, push, and shvitz. And as we get ready, tomorrow morning, first thing, 7:50, shachris, morning seder in the base, as we get ready for the second quarter, we get ready to push. We're ready to maximize and really achieve, Bezrat Hashem, very, very big things together. Okay, Aaron.